So I want to start my talk actually with, it's a metta meditation or loving kindness meditation that came from a 7-day retreat I did last year in Hokioji Zen Center in southern Minnesota. It's right on the border of Minnesota and Wisconsin. It goes like this. May I neither reject nor chase anything in this moment, allowing the world to come to me. May I understand the interdependence of all things. May I experience the pivotal point. May I heal my body and my mind. May I freely forgive and be freely forgiven. May I protect, be protected by the Dharma. So, you know, the theme for this month is abundance. And when I heard that theme, I thought, oh, brother. How much is enough? How much is enough? And that from that came this idea of healing the hungry ghost inside of us. In the Buddhist tradition, the Chinese tradition, the Indian tradition, they're all kind of mushed together in there. So if you look on your, I think it's on there, isn't it? On your little, this guy. There's a little picture of the hungry ghost. Maybe it's up there. Oh, there it is. It's up there. So what it leaves out here is that in the big picture, there's a picture of a person next to it meditating. There's a monk sitting in this picture next to it. So what happens in the meditation is that whatever it is, and this happens in life anyway, is that whatever it is that I've been running from, you know, is coming up. It comes, I don't know how much of the theory to give you because it's always been a little confusing to me, but in the Buddhist tradition, everybody is stuck in this wheel of samsara, and one of the six realms, and the hungry ghost is one of the six realms. Do you guys want to hear about the other realms? Anybody? No? Okay. So it goes like this. So there's the hungry ghost, which is this being that can never be satisfied, has a really skinny neck and a giant stomach, but can never get enough. There's hell, so that's just basic torture. There's animals. There's asura, which are people that are at constant war. And asura, like, they have some good and some bad, but they're, like, typically super greedy. Humans, so these are beings. Humans, we're, like, one of the six realms, so you can be reborn in. And then there are, like, these heavenly creatures, or devas. And the idea in this tradition is that there's a cycle that goes on and on and on endlessly unless you wake up. So I hope to wake up. That's my goal, is to wake up. For me, the hungry ghost symbolizes the part of me that's never satisfied. So I think part of it is that we live in we're constantly bombarded with images of, like, I need, you know, this this gum, this shoes, this car, this motorcycle, this bleh, you know, and I think we're also problem solvers. So, you know, so what happens is, like, I got a new pair of shoes, and my old pair of shoes was too small. So I got a bigger pair of shoes. Well, this bigger pair of shoes, well, they're too big. So now I need another, you know. So it's just like this sort of, and then even it perpetuates it when I'm searching on my Safari or whatever. Actually, they just changed this on my computer, where they said they're not going to pop up the ads you've been looking at. You know, when you're looking on the screen and you're like going along, and it's like, hey, remember those shoes you were going to get? I'm like, I don't really need those. So it's just stuck that way. And this, for me in my life, it comes in a million ways. I want to illustrate this next with a story. It comes from, it's a Rumi story. It comes from the variation I read this from is from Coleman Barks, The Essential Rumi. And it's called Muhammad and the Huge Eater. So Muhammad knew that there were a lot of people that were going to come visit him. And he had everybody at his table, his friends, his people that were studying with him. And he said, you know, these people are coming tomorrow. They're going to come visit us. And I want each one of you to take one of these people home with you, because it'll be as if they've come a long way to see me. It'll be as if they're with me. They'll be with you, they'll meet, and you can feed them, put them up for the evening, and it'll be like we're all together. So the people came, they separated off with the families, they went along their merry ways, but there was one guy left. He was this giant fellow, and he was very downtrodden. And so he came to Muhammad's table. And they visited, and then they ate. And then he ate more than everybody else at the table combined. And then they went up. He went up to go to bed, and someone that worked in the house, like, slammed the door behind him in his room and locked the door so he couldn't get out just in case he needed to relieve himself during the night. So during the night, he starts to have repercussions from his meal. He starts to feel horrible. And he's dreaming, and he's nightmaring, and he thinks, God, my days are just all this eating, and my nights, oh God, I can't get out of the room, you know, and he proceeds to soil the sheets. Oh, he's mortified, he's horrified, he doesn't know, and he's just in sheer misery. Variation of hell. He thinks, God, I have to get out of here. I have to get out of here before anyone sees me. I have to get out of here. So thankfully, Muhammad is at the door. He sees what's happening, and he allows it to happen as it should, and he becomes invisible and opens the door so the man can get out. And he escapes, thankfully. No one sees him in the morning. Gets home. And then the people from the house that work with Muhammad say, see what this guest has done? See these filthy sheets? And Muhammad says, bring them to me. I will wash them. He gets a bucket of water and he washes, because there's this knowing inside of him that says, it's important that I wash these sheets. I need to do this work. They go, no. We just wanted to tell you how horrible that guy was. It's our work. He's like, no, it's important that I do this work. Meanwhile, the fellow gets home and he realizes his favorite amulet that he always wears, he's left it at Muhammad's house. So he has to go back and get it. So he goes back and he sees the hand of God washing his incredibly filthy sheets. And he hits his head on the post and it begins to bleed, and people run towards him and he's like, no, leave me alone. I'm wretched. I'm horrible. Muhammad comes to him and he kneels down, and Muhammad touches his head and opens his knowing. So I want to be really clear. I am the huge eater. I have been the huge eater. And it is only because of the grace of so many people. The love, the compassion, the unconditional acceptance. That I can begin to awaken. I think for me, the thing that drives this, whether it's eating or whatever, being busy. For me, you know, it's old trauma, undealt with. And through, that's actually why I've embraced this practice of Buddhism and sitting and Zazen, because it's given me the container in which I can begin to heal. So people are like, how can you do those solid retreats? You sit all day. And I'm like, because it's the only thing that's begun to really make a dent in my inner condition. Part of the thing with the hungry ghost is that the theory is that in a past life that they were like super greedy people and wouldn't share anything with anybody, and so then they can't accept anything. When I remember that I have enough and there's always enough to share, then I can come from this different place. Whenever I can remember that I am enough, that's for me, that's always the thing. I never feel like I'm quite good enough. I'm not quite a good enough musician. I'm not quite a good enough Buddhist. I'm not quite, any of that, anything. I'm not quite a good enough partner. I'm not, none of that. And Tara Brach talks about, what does she call it now? But she talks about kind of being in this illusion or being in this sort of idea that things are a way that they really aren't. So what I want to do now is just to take you into a very brief, you guys have done a metta meditation in the past. This is a little different. And my friend Karen Sandberg said, there's really, you only preach like one or two sermons. And my dad used to say, to a man with a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So for me, everything looks like it needs self-compassion. Everything looks like it needs this, I need to turn this love, this, to myself. And so I want to invite you all to sit upright if you can, and turn inward a little bit. And you can keep your eyes open, you don't have to show your eyes. It's just, I want you to just be present if you can. So just start by taking a deep breath in and out. Do that a couple of times. And we'll begin by, if you like, you can just listen to the sound of my voice. But the idea is to turn this loving kindness, this compassion, towards myself. May I be safe. May I be well. Be happy. May I be free from suffering. May I be safe. Free from suffering. Safe. May I be free from suffering. May I be at peace. Can start to bring your awareness back to the room. And I just want to invite you to consider for a moment the possibility that in every way we can heal. In every way we can heal. We can heal ourselves. We can help each other heal. We can and do make a difference in this world. We can extend this loving kindness out to those we love, to those we don't even know. We can extend this loving kindness out even to our enemies or those that we don't know well enough to know that they're not our enemies. If I can see myself in you, I start to be able to extend this loving compassion in your direction. If I'm so scared and so hurt and so wounded that I'm stuck here and that I'm worried that I'm never going to get enough, well then it changes the way that I see the world and in this practice. So I want to just encourage everybody. Okay, this is an ad. On Saturday mornings at 6:30 morning, we sit for meditation. I'm just going to say it because I really want y'all to come. Because that's the thing. It's like little by little by little. It's like chipping a rock, you know, chipping away, chipping away, chipping away, chipping away. Is it the one? I don't know if it's when they're making a sculpture, you know, like what is the one, you know, blow that makes a difference? I don't know, but it's just this next one. So developing a regular sitting practice. And you don't have to be a Buddhist to do it. You don't have to be a Buddhist. You can be a Buddhist. I love being, you know, like it's awesome. But, you know, what I loved about moving back here was that I can be a UU and I can be a Buddhist. Like, yay! You know, when I was in St. Paul, I could only be a Buddhist because I only had time to do that. So I can't begin to tell y'all how meaningful it is for me to be here with you in this way. And that if there's any way that I can share this way of being, this way of thinking about the world, this way of approaching myself and other people that can really make a difference, I'm so grateful that I can do this. And trust me, I don't do it perfectly. Yeah, just ask Tom. But this regular sitting practice is the thing that has begun to chip away at my self-hatred and begin to allow me to love and accept myself just the way I am. And I believe that it can do that for you in whatever way works for you. So join us Saturday morning at 6:30 or Tuesday evening at 6:30 or Friday morning at 6:30 or some other way or in your own room, but do it every day. Do it every day and just see what happens. Even if you start with 5 minutes, like do it every day. And maybe you do it when you're running, but find some time to go inside and reconnect with that life force, that beauty, that love, that compassion.